The Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you.
Hello, listener, and welcome to The Big Red Couch. Today's episode is episode 58, and the card reads, The Ages of Elvis. On the microphones today, from the Manor, we have Ben.
Hello.
And here in the Big Red Couch recording studio, I'm Craig. We really need to work on our transitions for that bit.
Yeah.
And by we, I guess I mean me.
Maybe you could punch it up a bit.
Yeah. So, Ages of Elvis.
So?
I don't actually know where we got this one from. I mean, I think it's one of the very old cards, and it's in my block capitals, which is always a little bit disturbing because I don't remember writing them.
Well, it's part of my thesis, the way I approach to this particular one, is that Elvis is ubiquitous and eternal. So maybe that's how it happened.
It is the will of the universe. It makes sense. I mean, I should say that I have actually seen a few Elvis movies, though mostly in the context of them being on TV and having a relative watching it while saying it was such a shame and such a waste and possibly crying.
It's interesting. I mean, I don't believe that Elvis ever visited New Zealand.
I don't think so.
No, it's unlikely. When did he die? Was it 1978, 76, something like that?
I should totally have the Wikipedia page up, and I will do that right now, because then we can answer such burning questions.
We could actually figure out what the age of Elvis was.
42 when he died, I believe. Which makes him... died in 77. 42 when he died, which is basically my age and makes me realize just how little I have accomplished.
So, the age of Elvis is our age.
Pretty much.
Well, this is going to get somber anytime soon.
So, yes, I now have the Wikipedia page up just in case it becomes relevant.
Also, if my maths is as bad as it usually is, that would make him 90 this year if he had lived or continued to not expire.
Yep, he was born in 35.
Wow. Interesting. So, a 90-year-old Elvis.
90 or 80?
80.
80, I believe.
80. 80-year-old Elvis. The world would be a different place. Maybe that's something we could think upon. The alternate universe where Elvis did survive.
Yeah, that would be an interesting one. And that sort of touches very briefly on one of my ideas, because I came up with two ideas and couldn't pick between the two. How do we want to do this? I could, like, launch into one, you could call a stop if I'm sinking your battleship?
No, go for it, go. That's part of the game. As we are, a crazy internet game show, that's one of the pitfalls.
Fair enough. Well, I will go with the one that was sparked off by your thought of, well, what if Elvis hadn't died? Mm-hmm. And was thinking about the ages of Elvis as this multiversal kind of thing.
Ah, right.
Imagining a circumstance where you have all of the different possible Elvises.
The Elvi, as it were?
The Elvi, as it were, yes.
This is something I had considered, though I haven't gone down this route directly, but what I should say, this was mostly because of two things. Elvis impersonators, meaning that you could legitimately have multiple Elvises in one place.
I've seen that picture, yes. It's quite cool.
And this is accepted. It comes through in other things as well, but having a multiplicity of Elvises is apparently normal. And the other thing is the original Civilization video game, where you have entertainers. You could change your population, some of them, into people to keep the rest of the population happy. And from the very earliest age of man, where you can manage to make these entertaining specialists in your community, they look like Elvis.
Huh.
They were like 8 pixels tall, but they looked like Elvis.
And they were late period Vegas sequins and cape Elvis.
They were little blocks of pixels, but you look at them and you say, Elvis.
Yep.
So that's an interesting aspect of the man's legacy, that there may be more than one of him. There are different incarnations of Elvis, but they are all equally Elvis.
Pretty much. Yes, so I'm hazy on what the plot might be. But I just had this idea of a group that is made up of every player playing a different possible Elvis. You could maybe take the actual historical Elvis out of the equation. And so you instead have the Elvis who joined the army because it was a requirement of the time, discovered that he actually liked being in the military more than being a singer. And so you now have, a number of years later, this decorated military man.
General Presley.
Well, he was enlisted. He rose, I believe, to the rank of sergeant. But, you know, I don't know at the time how much movement between enlisted and commissioned there was. But you could certainly have Warrant Officer Presley.
Yeah.
Or First Sergeant Presley. If you want to go absolutely hilarious, you go with Sergeant of the Army Presley. If we're sort of pushing this thing as hard as it can go, so this is the highest ranking enlisted man in the US Army, Elvis Presley.
That he could represent some aspect of the multiverse's
sense of humor.
Apart from that, it could maybe this is like Michael Moorcock's Eternal Champion. Yeah, his Eternal Champion. This is the aspect of Elvis that is required to do this thing. And you'd have other, you're like Elvis the movie star, Elvis the singer, yeah. Elvis the karate expert.
Well, depending on how dark you wanted to go with it, you can also go with, because I know he was on the outskirts of the Hollywood blacklist era. I'm imagining a circumstance where either he had a much bigger involvement in that, or possibly actively opposed it. That could be kind of interesting, because then you've got Cold War, Red Scare, for want of a better word, civil rights Elvis.
Interesting, because that could address the duality where he took musical traditions from African Americans and made them insanely popular in the rest of society. He became this sort of face for this kind of music. He was derided as being, you know, corrupting the youth of today with his hip waggling and his sultry singing.
His pelvic sorcery, as it were.
Indeed. That's quite a phrase.
Indeed. Courtesy of Guardians of the Galaxy. But
Nice. And also, yeah, it would be an interesting, like, commie, yeah, like commie Elvis.
Oh, not again. Even commie Elvis, just...
Yeah, just subversive Elvis.
Opposed, yeah, actively or possibly passively or undergroundly opposed to the entire existence of Joe McCarthy Elvis.
You've also got
potentially musical family duo Elvis, yeah, supposing his twin brother, who was stillborn, had not been stillborn.
The Presley brothers. Oh, wow.
The Presley brothers. Yeah.
Because family musical acts have always been, were big in the time. They've always been big in country music and so forth. And the idea, wow.
If you had Elvis and Jesse Presley, who were identical twins. The characters are reasonably easy to come up with. What I don't know is what they might be doing or why you might have all of these characters in the same place.
Well, another podcast may have solved this problem for us. I know that the brain goes blank. I have literally forgotten the podcast I was listening to the other day. Excuse me, I'll just pick up my phone and fix that. Happy Jacks. I think we discussed them moments ago, in fact. The Happy Jacks podcast, I'm pretty sure someone told of a game they run at cons where you get the Harrison Ford game.
Huh.
You get all the characters that Harrison Ford has played. You get your Indiana Jones and Han Solo and so forth. And you cram into the same game and you're playing different aspects of the actor and through the characters he's played. And they have to save the universe or save their respective universes by doing this great thing. And it came through as partially because of the characters and partially because of the way that you want this sort of thing to work, as a pulpy, floating vagabond-style multiverse crossover game.
That would work nicely.
And I think they've discussed other iterations as well, but the idea of the Elvi of the multiverse coming together to face some terrible threat, maybe the Dark Elvis, maybe it's the post-apocalypse King of Las Vegas in the movie Six String Samurai.
Oh, the King of Rock and Roll, who has been holding Vegas together for countless years.
After the war, yes. Now I've seen Mad Max Fury Road, I got to see him as kind of an Immortan Joe kind of figure. But
I'd like to think he'd be a bit nicer than Immortan Joe, because it would be hard to be less.
Yeah, a little less rapey, maybe.
Yeah, a little less murdery, that would be nice.
is some aspect of the Dark Elvis. This one of the Elvis iteration has actually gone off the deep end and is going to destroy the universe or try and be the one or something like that, the soul Elvis.
Nice. And it's up to the other Elvi to stop him.
Yep. Just to preserve the fabric of the cosmos.
And as it were, the spirit of rock and roll.
Of course. Well, he's the king.
That almost wrote itself. That's kind of awesome.
Yeah, I like the idea of taking that idea that Elvis is, you know, ubiquitous and has this multiplicity of forms, and maybe the dangerous one is the one that faked his death, the one that the conspiracy theorists swear they saw at the checkout somewhere.
So the Bubba Hotep Elvis.
A little bit, yeah.
My God, it's Bruce Campbell the entire time.
That's more plausible than I like to dwell
on. In retrospect, we should have seen it coming.
Yes. Damn you, Bruce! Cool.
Well, that was my first idea for Ages of Elvis. And that would make for a fun con game. The various Elvi have to get together across the multiverse to stop the one who's just gone completely off the reservation.
Yep. Cool. That's good. Trying out my idea?
Yep.
Cool. Well, I am going back to my role-playing roots in a little bit of a lazy way and a little bit of a throwback to games I played when I was much younger. I was figuring basically running a Elvis-themed paranoia game because bad acting, terrible puns, themed experimental devices that might kill you, and clone after clone with, you know, coiffed hair and sunglasses.
And sideburns.
It's just something I think you could do. I would need to sit down and come up with a slew of terrible punny names, but that's part of paranoia. I'm thinking that there is one of these religious fervors that sweeps Alpha Complex fairly regularly because the citizens are credulous and have been possibly genetically engineered and pharmaceutically altered to be credulous in many circumstances. But someone is leading a revolt or an uprising through the power of husky-voiced singing and sparkly jumpsuits.
And pelvic sorcery. Sorry.
Pelvic sorcery.
I will eventually get over that, but I'm going to be honest, it's going to take a while.
Indeed. So Friend Computer is attempting to isolate and track down this commie mutant traitor. Of course, the players are in some way involved in the cult of Elvis, themselves, and so forth. And they're forced to deal with experimental weapons and equipment, blue suede rocket boots, things like that. Do not step on my blue suede rocket boots. It's probably going to go badly for everyone.
Do not step in the blue suede corridor because you don't have clearance.
Indeed, it's a trouble. And yeah, just basically pull out all of the comedy bits, all of the cliches and so forth, and just jam into a paranoia game. I think it would work pretty well.
Makes sense. That would be a lot of fun. One-shot sort of fun, I think. Though paranoia, so...
You can play paranoia on a couple of different levels, but traditionally zap with the exclamation mark, where the players and GM are equally trying to murder each other in funny and amusing ways, and success and failure are about equivalent as long as it's funny.
And the best traitor is the one who can't defend themselves.
Oh, yes. Or speak. Or one that people can't clearly remember after they disappeared in an expanding ball of plasma.
I am imagining things like sequined jumpsuits that will reflect laser blasts.
Oh, yeah. I think they already exist in the game, so yeah, that'd be easier to put in. Oh, reflect armor is the basic troubleshooter gear. So I think it's supposed to be slightly ablative, but yes. Putting sequins on it. Easy.
No, that will make it multi-spectral reflect armor.
Yeah. Which probably will just mean that you get shot with a laser of one security clearance, which immediately ends up refracting into dozens of other security clearance laser beams and hitting the rest of the party. Yes, I'm back in the zone. I know how this works again.
Yeah, you're getting your paranoia mojo back, aren't you?
Yeah, I can tell. I have tried to run more sort of subtle games where people aren't dying every 15 seconds, and it depends on the crowd that you're dealing with. Some people get confused and frightened if it's not the case.
That is the reason why I have never played Paranoia, because the only people who have ever been enthusiastic enough about running a game to actually run one regrettably have been the sort who want to play that kind of game. And
well, and it's the that's the relish which they seem to take to.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I can't understand how they could put you off.
Yeah, it's kind of when, allowing for a small amount of hyperbole, but when somebody is talking about the fact that Paranoia is an awesome game because you can carry player grudges across to characters and kill people repeatedly, and that's the point of the game, and it's really great when people don't know that because they don't know why you're doing this, etc., and they've got that glazed look in their eye, they're drooling slightly, and they have the husband bulge. it really makes me at least not want to play the game.
Yes, I think they are giving you the wrong impression of the point. It should
be
comedic.
Yeah, but they've done it really well. I mean, the communication is loud and clear.
True, true. I think you've got a good understanding of what they like in the game and why you should run screaming.
Pretty much, yeah. I would dearly love to actually play the Elvis the Elvis Paranoia game as a slightly less kill everything that moves version of Paranoia.
Paranoia is about the humor and death being silly and largely inconsequential, and people getting themselves the realization that they have just talked themselves into their own execution, or someone pulls a particularly clever piece of sophistry out and it becomes apparent to everyone that, oops, I guess you get terminated. That's the fun part of it. Just the give me the dice, I want to kill him.
Yes.
Is missing the point. It's about the fun. And
give me six lines written by an honest man, and within them I shall find something with which to hang him.
That sort of stuff. You don't want to get there too often. I saw a game at university, and one of the people in it was a staunch advocate of the Atheist Society. You probably know who I'm talking about.
I know who he is, yep.
Man could argue rings around anything. It was great until it lasted for 2 hours.
Yeah.
You've got to have a sense of proportion about the whole thing. So yeah, I could see inserting that into the Paranoia setting, you could have a lot of fun. And they've probably done it already, and I'm forgetting part of it. There's a strong chance, and I'm checking the show notes if I find it. But one of the things I always love about Paranoia is the writing in the books is still really, really zingy. It really works as humour. And at least the earlier editions. I'm not sure about so much of the old ones. And they try to do a lot of things with systems and so forth that I've been liked. I mean, they weren't always immediately successful. They abandoned skill trees after the first succession, but those sorts of things ended up getting ported into video games almost wholesale. And also, it had, while there's this gigantic, there was this very combative nature between the players, the rest of the players and the GM, there was also great freedom in just nominating stuff, coming up with things happening. There was no currency or mechanic to say, I pay a point and have this happen. It was like, but you could just say, oh, I do this thing. And it was the kind of game that if you wanted to find an event here, or, you know, find a hidden door or discover something just at the drop of a hat, you could. It would likely kill your character, but if it was in the spirit of fun and entertainment, it's probably going to happen. And this kind of thing encouraged that sort of free-form stuff.
I wonder if the fact that it was a darkly comedic game meant that they gave themselves, or they had a little bit more latitude to play with stuff.
Maybe. It definitely wasn't a standard role-playing game of any era. It broke with lots of conventions and had a bunch of really whip-smart people writing it. So, yeah, kind of the sort of thing that you can let loose on. And like I say, it has some of it's not explicitly the players and GM sit around a campfire, sing Kumbaya and create a magical story together. There was, in the spirit of this mayhem and chaos and violence, there was also you were trying to contribute to keeping this kind of hairball disaster movie rolling.
Yes, there's a certain player responsibility to not kill the story at the same time as they kill the party.
Which is kind of an accomplishment, to be fair. That's kind of the and, you know, sometimes it wasn't explicit, but sometimes taking a hit for the team
was the way to go.
Yeah. So there you go.
Indeed. I could do my other Elvis idea.
Sure. What was your other idea?
Well, this was mostly based on wordplay and noticing that ages sounds an awful lot like Aegis.
Uh-huh.
As in, you know, under the umbrella of or under the protection of.
Okay.
And apparently I've been on a bit of a superhero kick recently because I was just trying to think of, okay, so what would being under the protection of Elvis mean? And that's where Elvis impersonators come in, because an Elvis impersonator stands out.
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point. Regardless, almost regardless of which era they go with, unless they go with Elvis before anybody had the slightest clue who he was.
Stealth Elvis, yes.
Yeah, Stealth Elvis, or Elvis is mowing his lawn or driving a cab Elvis. Other than those, all of the Elvi are very recognizable. I mean, Vegas Elvis, Elvis Comeback Special, Elvis Jailhouse Rock, etc. They're all very recognizable dress and style.
I would quibble slightly at they're identifiable. Recognizable, taking on the mantle, literally, in some cases, with that little opera cloak thing that he had, of Elvis, kind of, is almost the perfect disguise. You don this garb and you are Elvis.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. He's they're recognizable as Elvis, so that whenever somebody describes, who was that that figure who helped? Oh, it was Elvis. Well, it was somebody dressed as Elvis. And that's as far as it goes.
Who was that rhinestone bespectacled man?
Indeed!
There's no question it was Elvis. It wasn't anyone else.
Yeah. Yes, but at the same time, you don't know who it was. So I had the idea of, and this is possibly borrowing from a suggested campaign from Unknown Armies, of all things.
Mm-hmm.
In that one, it was the suggestion of, I think, valets, the car parking variety, realizing that they have access to cars that are essentially untraceable, or at least untraceable back to them, and are practically invisible, because who the hell notices the guy who parks the car? I was just imagining a kind of a crime-fighting thing where everybody is an Elvis impersonator, because you take off the costume, nobody recognizes you anymore.
Yeah.
With the costume on, they recognize you as an Elvis impersonator, but they don't recognize you as you.
Hmm. The shades of the 3,000 Miles to Graceland
Which I've
movie.
Not seen.
It has some of the worst reviews for a movie I've liked that I've ever seen.
Worse than Hudson Hawk?
Oh, maybe not. It is kind of silly, and there's a gun battle at the end that makes no sense at all. But, yeah. So.
There's a lot of Elvis?
There's a lot of Elvis. They're using the Elvis principle to disguise themselves during a heist. But
nice.
Using this power for good, for combating crime, that's pretty plausible.
Cool. Yeah, so I'm not... I mean, the obvious thing would be to set it either in Vegas, because then, yeah, a crime fighter dressed as Elvis in Vegas will never be found.
Mm-hmm.
Or at some sort of Elvis convention. It probably wouldn't work so well in Poughkeepsie.
You might be a bit more easy to spot, it's true.
Then again, maybe that's still the point. If you can do your quick change act fast enough, if you can step around a corner, whip off the sequined caped jumpsuit and the sideburns and the glasses and just be walking away, it'll still probably work. It's not quite a Superman phone booth quick change, but it would depend on whether you wanted to go with Las Vegas or Hollywood glitz and glamour crime fighting, or whether you wanted to play with the idiocy of people whose secret identity is incredibly obvious.
Yes. Maybe that's the power of this. Would you have a team of Elvis protectors?
I would go with a team, yeah. I would basically have one from each era. So mm-hmm. I'd have incredibly early days Elvis, I would have a movie star Elvis, I would have a Elvis Comeback Special, I forget the exact title of it, but it was basically a...
Was the one he did in Hawaii, or...?
I don't know where it was shot, but I have seen chunks of it, and it was a very interesting concert when what you've seen previously is the hordes of screaming fans, and in this case what they had was sort of an arena with this very slightly raised stage in the middle of it, just a bunch of people, including Mr. Presley, sitting there with instruments just chatting with the audience and playing music.
Okay, cool.
It was almost kind of a club vibe. It was a little bit more formatted than that. Mm. But it was... I'll see if I can look up which one it was. And yeah, it's just this guy with a guitar, wearing mostly black clothing, chatting with the people from the audience who are just sitting on the edge of the stage and trading a few jokes and playing some songs. And yeah, you've got to have glitz, glamour, cape, bizarre karate move, Elvis. Maybe you even go with military Elvis. And yes, have them as a crime-fighting team for some reason.
These people might be professional or, you know, hobbyist Elvis impersonators, but they've been inspired by the teachings of the king to go out there and do good. And they're carrying this forward. I think in Fallout New Vegas, there's a tribe of post-apocalypse people who are the kings. I think they're made up in that sort of way as well.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's the other idea.
Cool.
Not a great deal more or less sensible than my first one,
mm-hmm.
but such is life.
Cool. All right, so we also have some audient, in fact, it's pretty much this is all Will, isn't it?
It is another solid block of Will Tent.
Okay.
So, right. If you're listening, hi Will!
Yay! Well, I'll kick off with Will's idea for snake style versus monkey style.
All right.
And Will writes, honestly, I didn't have any idea when I sent this pigeon, but I thought it sounded cool. I have, however, come up with an idea. Zoo civilization. The players are made the heads of various parts of a zoo. The goal is to improve your section of the zoo while keeping both the animals and the visitors of the zoo happy. Improvements can be things like increasing the size of the enclosure, adding more exotic animals to the section of the zoo, and better ways of keeping things clean. In order to do this, you have to perform tasks so that your board of directors will give you more money. Along with the regular natural disasters like tornadoes or earthquakes, someone may have gotten a little too close to a diaper pen and fallen in. These things take money away and make both people and animals unhappy. I'm envisaging this as being some sort of hybrid card game for the actual resources, / RPG to perform the tasks and ask for money from the board, / resource management game. Instead of saying this wouldn't be a very good game, I'll say it's a very niche game.
Yes, though I personally believe that somebody falling into the tiger pen, while it might make people and many animals unhappy, one specific tiger will have had the best day ever.
Quite possibly. It crossed my mind as well. It sounds a bit like XCOM with zoo animals.
Whereas I was thinking theme park tycoon.
Yeah, yeah.
Or roller coaster tycoon, one of those.
Yeah, it's different crossover there. But making it a card game. I don't know. Doing a bit of improvised asking for things from the board and so forth, and having a card game mechanics, I've never seen that work particularly well. I think it's where the hard edges of the board game mechanics come up against the soft edges of a role-playing game, and things don't quite go together.
I can see a way that you could do it using a modified version of Fate, because I can see the whole thing of, okay, I am now at a position where I'm going to make my roll for awesome attraction.
Mm.
And I will get... Yeah, so I can see a kind of a cashing in fate points kind of mechanic going on there. I think using pure fate wouldn't necessarily work. You'd need to sort of almost start with a resource management board game, start with an RPG that had some sort of Benny mechanic, and mash them together.
The other way you could do it is more of a board game style thing, is that as the zookeeper, you've got a very open, obvious win condition. You're working towards everything's on the board. You also play a director who has a hidden victory condition. And part of your voting for various things and the bit of the horse trading and power exchange at that point would be voting in something that benefits your director's position, allows you to get a victory condition as well. And maybe it's a combination of whether how well your zookeeper did and how well your director did.
So a double win condition where only one of them is visible to everybody else. Nice.
And consequently, it means you can do your negotiation, and the pitching for getting better resources and so forth is controlled by votes made by the other players, but you don't precisely know how it's going to turn out. The keepers and the directors things should never be in direct opposition, because you could either get a really strong combination where you could go, right, I'm going to get all the carnivorous animals and I've got the carnivorous favouring director. And if you randomly got those together, you'd be very strong, or you'd be working in the same direction. So they should be in parallel, but you should never know exactly what benefits you are having. Yeah, that could be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, if you had the zookeeper and director things operating on complementary but different tracks, for want of a better word. Sort of strategic and tactical level, as it were, so that the goal of one is never the same as the goal of another, or is never entirely opposed to. They're complementary.
Yeah.
Balancedly tricky, but entertaining to do, yeah.
Yeah, so that would be an interesting thing. And the sort of voting mechanic, wheeling-dealing thing works much better on a board game sort of setting rather than a role-playing game. I think I just this week played Ankh-Morpork, which is an interesting game where you have a selection of characters doing things in Ankh-Morpork, causing or putting down trouble in the various quarters of the city, but your shadowy figure is not disclosed until you actually hit your win condition.
I played the Firefly board game last night, which isn't as relevant as I thought it was when I started that thread, to be honest. But it does have a certain amount of victory condition thing going on. Sorry.
Good on you for playing board games. I know you've had a phobia for those for many years, so...
Yes, but it was an induced phobia.
Yes. Right, do you want to tackle Will's next...
The next idea we have from Will is for, is there a market for Soylent Bubba? And reads, in an attempt to get away from the cannibalism, if I had a dollar for every time I said that, I remembered that here in America, we have a frozen hamburgers called Bubba Burgers. The plot of this game is that the players play eco-terrorists. Fed up with all of the cows being led to slaughter for our consumption, the players have two goals. The player's task is to break into the various Bubba factories and replace the meat with soy meat-like products. The players must save the cows, headed for the slaughterhouse. I can see this as a fiasco game, with the twist coming once the first of the two tasks has been completed. I think Fate could also be fun. Hi, Kev. Assuming the group doesn't take this particular game very seriously.
I think that fiasco would probably be more cromulent that you didn't take the game seriously because you're going to fuck up. It's going to fail. It's kind of the point. And you're all terrible people anyway. Because I can see the two axes here is the replacing the meat so people aren't eating the terrible meat products. To do that, you actually have to have unless you have some sort of magic de-meatening ray, you actually have to have a production line of soy meat-like products available, which kind of implies that you're a company that sells soy products. It currently means this is not eco-terrorism, this is industrial espionage, which might work at odds against the people saving the living cows.
And there's some nice conflict right there, that you effectively have an eco-terrorist group, some of which are, in fact, shills for Big Soybean.
Yep.
Never thought I'd say that phrase. Some of which, I don't know, hobby farmers, maybe?
Who knows? There could be...
Cattle rustling on a grand scale?
Free-range terrorists, yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah, because they're definitely working against one of the... If you were going to do it as a more high-flown action kind of thing, you'd probably do it in Fate. It might be ridiculous if you took a very small step back, but you could run it as, you know, a serious concern.
Yeah, if you wanted to have... Well, gritty realism is the wrong term, but perhaps a little bit more realism than fiasco. Then, yeah, Fate and trying to organise enormous convoys of trucks filled with soy burgers, yeah, and equally enormous convoys of trucks filled with unimpressed cows.
Yes, it's not that fiasco isn't realistic. I think fiasco is actually more true to life than most role-playing games, because it's about dreadful people being dreadful to one another in a sort of Coen Brothers-esque way.
That is accurate.
That it feels more plausible than, you know, the we're going to save the day, hooray for us kind of stuff that a lot of role-playing games, the reason we play a lot of role-playing games. But I think either approach could be very amusing on its own merits.
Yeah, I think if I was... Yeah, I mean, Fiasco was fantastic for the train wreck aspects of things. If I wanted to do a game that was more to do with, okay, how do we do this thing, then it would definitely be Fate.
You're attempting to set up the heist, effectively.
Yeah, yes. If I was trying to do a heist-type game, it would be Fate, and I'd probably go with some of the suggestions in Crime World from the Fate Worlds books. Because, yeah, that's a really good point. It's a heist. It's a weird heist.
Yes, you're trying to heist 3,000 head of cattle and, you know, a couple of tons of burger patties.
Yeah.
To make a point.
And potentially, yeah, potentially it's a multi-stage heist, depending on if you do not have strong connections into the soybean industry, you are potentially attempting to steal multiple tons of burger patties, smuggle them into restaurants, while at the same time smuggling out the actual meat and rescuing a bunch of cows. It's a very complicated scheme all of a sudden.
With no clear outcome, it's got to be said. So, yeah, yeah.
I am hoping for some sort of cattle drive through a restaurant at some point. I know it makes no sense that the cows would be anywhere near a fast food outlet, but I'm just really loving the idea of a bunch of cows possibly being driven by somebody who was riding one of them and shouting, yeah, going through the drive-through at a McDonald's.
Maybe that's the point. Maybe that's the theatre. There you're going, look, this animal didn't die for the burger you're currently eating because we swapped all the burgers for plant matter of some sort. Ha!
Yes, and you can't tell the difference.
And, sorry, Bessie just pooped on your shoes. But
but look, it's organic! Wait, why are you hitting me? Yes.
That would maybe that's the objective. Maybe that's why you have to swap the burgers and free the cows, because you'll make this point ring home.
Swap the burgers, free the cows, save the entire planet.
Indeed. It's Heroes all over again. It's getting rebooted. You believe that? Bizarre.
Well, I watched the first season. The first time.
Well, well done. Because all of the things it did right, it did in the first season, as far as I can
tell. Oh, really? Okay, so I stopped at a good point.
It got weird.
I did spend a lot of time shouting at Mohinder. I think that was his name?
Yeah. He was terrible.
Fantastic character, bit of a wobby. And I had issues with the finale. It seemed to involve everybody having read the script to make sense. But that's another story and possibly another podcast that is not our podcast. I'm sure there is the Ranting About Heroes podcast out there.
There is going to be any time now. It may be a standalone thing, it may be part of another thing, but someone will do the Ranting at Heroes podcast.
Indeed. And if you're on that podcast and would like to come and talk to us about it, we'd be happy to have you as a guest. Just saying.
True, yeah. We'll entertain conversing on a number of topics, as we have amply demonstrated. But
we are happy to talk about things we know nothing about. I mean, we've been doing it for 2 years. Why stop now?
I think this is a timely time to mention that, well, we'll be talking about things we know nothing about in different countries shortly, and one of those is going to be America.
Indeed. Because I am off to Gen Con, and so the episode after this one, 59, will be dropping during Gen Con. We don't really have... Should we go into a bit of the detail? Or
as much as it extends, yes.
Yeah, we don't have a Gen Con special or anything planned, because, to be honest, with our sort of format, there's not a lot we can do. It would be awesome to believe that I could set up a bunch of on-the-spot, big red couch, live, unedited, unprepped, raw, but to do that, you need to be somebody who isn't me. I am not that guy.
Well, this way, say if people happen to hear about this on the internet and see Craig wandering around Gen Con and say, hey, Craig, let's hang out and talk for a bit, and we happen to record it and happen to put it into an episode, we could totally do that, right?
That would be awesome, yeah. If you're a listener and you're going to be at Gen Con, it would be awesome to meet you, if only to say, hey, thanks for listening to our show. Because, to a certain extent, that still slightly baffles me.
Indeed. If you can explain your actions, we might feel justified in explaining ours.
That's indeed.
This deal we can come up with.
Introduce yourself and justify why your life has taken you to the point where you're listening to this show.
Yes. What terrible deed. What thoughtless act. What
monstrous sin have you committed in this life or a previous one to lead you to do this dreadful, dreadful thing?
Indeed. We'll have ways of contacting Craig. Just comment on the website. Bounce something off Twitter.
Chuck us an email.
Yeah.
There's an email link on the Contact Us page. And yeah, in all honesty, would actually love to hear from any listeners to the show.
Mm-hmm. Pitch us some ideas from the upcoming shows section on the website. Just bang on about your favourite sort of gaming or anything dumb that we've said. If we've missed some important facet of Elvisology, let us know. We'd be fascinated.
Indeed.
Like back away slowly, smiling all the time. But hell, it's all good.
And in the wake of Gen Con, please tell us how your Gen Con went.
Indeed.
Because it's a really big thing, and I only ever see one very small slice of it and hear about a few other slices from my friends there.
Tell us about how you survived the doom that came to Indianapolis.
Indeed.
And comes annually.
Doom that comes annually to Indianapolis until at least 2020. In fact, the contract is being, the future extension is being negotiated as we speak, I would expect. I understand these things take a while.
Yeah, well, they've got a plan 5 years ahead, which is something completely incomprehensible to me, so...
It's a big business. It's a big place. As I've said before, I would be entirely comfortable driving my car around at road speed in many of the corridors at Gen Con, provided there were no people there. They are that big.
Excellent. And if you catch Craig doing that, get pictures or something. That sounds cool.
Yeah, get pictures. Maybe come and testify in my defense. I mean, they'll certainly have me on driving without a license. That one's just a given.
And on the wrong side of the corridor, probably.
Ooh. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that'd be bad.
Indeed.
Destruction of property, probably?
I am seeing the mall car chase from the Blues Brothers in my head right now.
As am I. And that's a lovely note to end the show on.
Indeed. So, ideas, thoughts, Gen Con, contacts, anything, let us know, and we will see everyone next time.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Next time on the Big Red Couch.
Coming up next week on the Big Red Couch, Supermax Kindergarten, for all the master criminal children.
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to hoarde.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported from creativecommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time!